Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Overlap. I'm, of course, joined by Rian. We are on an international break, which effectively means players are not playing for their clubs and we are bored. We're not really bored. We actually had a really fun weekend of international journeying, if you will. But no club football. And it actually feels like a while since we've last had club football. I don't know why. Like, the October international break, I think, specifically is really what does it. November and September are like kind of like whatever, because it's kind of around Labor Day in the U.S. You have Thanksgiving in November in the U.S. as well, so it's not really that big of a deal. But October is like, I'm not thinking about Halloween during international break, so it kind of just gets stuck
in general, not even just like in soccer. Like, I was even thinking about it, like with like holidays and that time between like Labor Day and Thanksgiving, where there's like not really like national holidays. There's obviously like Indigenous Peoples Day,
but
not everyone gets off work for that, so it doesn't feel like it feels like there's just kind of like the slog from September
the slog. Yeah. That is absolutely the title of the podcast, The Slog. I've heard that word before, just not in a very long time. But anyway, I digress. International break is what we were getting to. Rian and I had a really fun weekend, actually. We got a chance to actually see the U.S. men's national team. They played Germany. They took the lead. Then they lost against a pretty decent and newly coached Julian Nagelsmann at the helm now for Germany. Very, very interesting game. We're going to talk mainly about the U.S. men's national team during this week. It's going to be a shorter podcast just because not much is going on. Before we get to the U.S. men's national stuff, Rian doesn't even know I want to mention this. I just wanted to briefly comment on the fact that two things. Uruguay beat Brazil for the first time in 22 years. And I feel like that just kind of got swept under the radar for the reason I'm about to mention. But Neymar tore his ACL. That feels like an unbelievably big deal, even if he did go to Saudi Arabia in the summer. I don't want to spend too much time on this. I really don't. But it's just kind of crazy to me that we're talking about a player that at the height of his, like at his peak, was like close to Messi Ronaldo levels. And the fall has just been really sad to watch in a lot of ways, because like maybe there is just no living up to those two, but it feels like the end. It kind of does. Like, he's probably not going to play Copa America next summer. I mean, maybe, but likely not.
That would be an amazing recovery, and considering his like fitness history, he does not seem like a guy who's going to come back from an ACL injury like earlier than expected, right?
No,
he's not. But you know, it is pretty sad. I think part of it, what you're saying, like not living up to Messi, Ronaldo, and like that's like an impossible task for any player, and like it's gonna take some time for, I guess, a community of avid soccer fans to not let the sustained brilliance of those two players cloud like judgment of other players, especially players that played around that same time. We talked about Hazard in the last episode, like his retirement, right? We're talking about Neymar here, two guys who put together several seasons of greatness, right? That just happened to be at the same time as Lionel Messi and Ronaldo, but doesn't take anything away from the levels that those two players got to. Like, each of them, I think at one point could have been thought of as the next best player in the world outside of those two, right?
Like, definitely
both of them had those times. So I think, like you said, it's unfortunate. You're not that surprised that Neymar would come down with like an injury like this at the end, right? Because he's, you know, his injury history and fitness history, it's not that surprising that his career is going to kind of peter out a bit here, but that doesn't take anything away from how amazing of a career he's had to this point. So
all super fair. Yeah, just wanted to mention that as like a damn, that really happened. So anyway, we'll transition, Rion. We'll talk a little bit about the U.S. men's national team. Like I mentioned, 3-1 loss to Germany, which we did actually attend, and it was proper fall northeast, like soccer weather. It was just pristine, like cloudy and drizzly and light rain, 50 degrees. Like, you needed two layers minimum. Your hands were starting to get cold. We were sitting near the top. Like, it was just, it was magical.
Elliot stood almost the entire game.
I did. I wanted to stand because if you sit, I feel like you feel colder.
And yeah, like, I'm standing. I joined you in standing for like a good, for like a lot of the second half, I felt like.
Exactly. And there was no one behind us. So, like, who were we blocking? But it was phenomenal to watch. What did you think, Rion? Like, what did you think of the environment? We didn't, due to some car rental issues, get to attend much of the pre-game festivities. But what did you think of the environment, the game, the atmosphere? We learned in the middle of the game it was the highest attended highest attended soccer match in UConn's stadium. I believe something like that.
Yeah,
like
37,000. The caveats around the record were like were pretty confusing, honestly. I have no idea if that also means like the highest attended soccer match in Connecticut's history. I don't know. It was kind of vague, but I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, I think it ended up being like over 37,000 people there. Which is just awesome turnout, obviously, especially in such like a bit of a like a niche place in the country, like a Hartford, Connecticut. It was a great turnout. Like, the stadium looked completely packed, and there was like a pretty good German contingent as well too. They had their own section, kind of like away section in the stadium, but then also you would see like kind of smatterings of around the stadium of German supporters as well, which was cool, and kind of it just added to the environment of the game, the atmosphere at least. So lots of fun. Yeah, wish we could have done some tailgating, but it was really, really cool. Like, really cool first time going to a U.S. national team game.
That was your first time ever?
Yeah.
Wow. Because I didn't know that.
We've been to, it's hilarious. I've actually seen Jamaica play more than the U.S. You and I.
Close to the roots.
Yeah. It's pretty close. Caribbean. You and I obviously saw Argentina play Jamaica right before the World Cup. Then back in 2015, I had Gold Cup final tickets with my dad and godfather. And we were expecting the final to be U.S. and Mexico, but that was famously one. I guess that's a couple years before Jurgen Klinsmann got fired. But the U.S. lost to Jamaica in the semifinals of that tournament. So that's why I've seen Jamaica more than the U.S. not intentionally.
Yeah, I my first U.S. men's national team experience was actually in Philly. They played a Copa America game there in 2016, I believe, and I forget who was against. I just remember my dad very famously just had so much beef with DeAndre Yedlin, like so much beef, like because he also got a red card in that game, and so it just was like he had words for him. But anyway, digress.
What did you think of the environment, Alice?
I loved it. I actually really liked it. Like, it felt lively, and it felt kind of like the Argentina-Jamaica game that we went to in New Jersey with just less people. It felt like anytime the U.S. had a transition attack or had the ball and, you know, there was something exciting that was happening, you can kind of feel the buzz and the energy in the stadium. Having the Outlaws there was actually, like, very lively. They were banging on the drums the whole game. We were a little bit farther away, so we may not have heard the whole thing, but like you could very clearly tell that like it felt like a proper match, at least. The stakes were obviously very low, but like in terms of the atmosphere, I loved it. And for me, like, I want to know which players kind of like you were the most impressed with live, because there's always that difference, right, between watching players on TV and then watching them in person. I can tell you, for me, I was actually slightly underwhelmed. I'll start with Gio Reyna, but that might be more because injuries and fitness rather than like the player that he is, because we're going to get to the Ghana game in a second anyway. But for me, Christian Pulisic just live really impressed me. Both in terms of like his technical ability, which I knew was there, but not to the level that I really thought, and his just intelligence off the ball. Both of those things really stood out to me. Like, he was the one that was directing traffic because of his own movements. So he really, really stood out to me. His goal was obviously like outrageous. Like,
yeah, honestly, yeah, that moment was ridiculous.
It was sick. It was so sick.
The way the place erupted off of that, and especially like because a couple minutes before that, he obviously had the one-on-one chance where he tries to go around to Stegen, and you know we couldn't completely tell live that he dove, right? But then I saw a replay after, and it was like it was so much more obvious of a dive than I thought it was.
No, to us, it didn't look like he really moved for it at all.
Yeah, but. Yeah, I think just sticking on at least the U.S. players that stood out live, and maybe we can talk a bit about like the players in Germany that also stood out. But I thought that for me, Balogun, similar to what you said with Pulisic's off ball movement, and Pulisic's off ball movement was great too. That's how he got into like that position to dive. but Balogun's movement, similarly off the ball and just as a striker, was it like really popped live, like especially like in that same sequence where Pulisic is one-on-one with Ter Stegen. I believe that starts with someone playing a ball into Balogun. He plays it back to, I want to say it was Gio Reyna, but one of the other midfielders, and as soon as he played it, feels there's a defender on his back and just spun like so fast and immediately was into space and the ball found him, and then you know he played a great layoff to Pulisic as well there. But there were just those little moments where he's really intelligent, like running off the last defenders, and the way he kind of tries to find space himself and find positions for him to get in behind the defenders, like really intelligent runs. And I mean, we'll get onto a little bit in the Ghana game. Like, obviously, the goal scoring part of his game is also really impressive. But his overall, I didn't realize as much how good he was overall. Like, the touches were so clean. Like, the amount of times that the players were just comfortable playing a ball into him, and he's one touching it to someone who's running off the ball, or one touching it back to whoever passed to him. Just really clean touches, and the ball like really sticks with him when you pass it up to him, and the team doesn't lose the ball. Like, that was all really impressive, and just made at least me feel even luckier that we were able to recruit him to the US.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, there was one moment where Tim Weah was running down right kind of the edge of the 18-yard box down the right-hand side and squared it back to Balogun, but Balogun was literally too fast for Tim Weah, and like he was ahead of the ball by the time it was played in. I think Tim Weah was like a half a second behind in terms of when he was playing the ball, and I think it just speaks to like just how quick Balogun's brain operates, and obviously his pace is not itself, but his brain, his touch, like it's all very, very strong. So yeah, I'm curious from your perspective who stood out on the German side. I feel like there are two obvious ones. I was mentioning a little bit before, a little bit before we started recording, but Musiala, Leroy Sané, and I'll give Gundogan a special shout out as well. But Tam, those boys can play. It is scary. Like, watching them go through basically at some combination of like playing the 10 versus like the right wing position, they were kind of all interchanging at some point. Bro, Musiala is so clean with his touch and so fast. In the, like, it is insane watching him live because he's a child. He's literally a child.
20 years old.
Yeah. And like Leroy Sané was, he was kind of having his way with Sergiño Dest multiple times, which we could have told you was going to be the case. Yeah. Before the game. But oh, that was like, it just speaks to how quality those players are. And then the one thing that I'd say about Gundogan is that he just kind of drifted through that midfield, like from a deep lying position, he would come pick up the ball, distribute out wide, come flow inside, be an outlet. Like he was kind of just roaming and free roaming where he wanted because he has that knowledge of where to be at any given time. So that was just really impressive to see as well. But what did you think?
Yeah, I think Gundogan was definitely one of the big standouts. Like he, it's similar to I think how he played the last couple seasons at Manchester City, like where he had that freedom of a guy who he could literally, we've talked about this before, but a guy who can genuinely play a 6, 8 or the 10 position, like that just doesn't really exist. There's maybe, I don't know. I don't know how many players. Yeah. I mean, he could also play the 9, like honestly, so like
pick a number.
Yeah. But Gundogan definitely one that stood out. Musiala, the way he glides, like you kind of said it, like anytime he was on the ball, and Sané also goes into this, anytime those guys are on the ball, it was just like, oh fuck.
That was literally, there were so many moments where I turned to you and I was like,
they're really, really scary on the ball. And I think like overall, like Germany's, their midfielders movement when they had the ball, around times like that, it wasn't always the same guy. Sometimes it would be Wirtz. Sometimes it would be Musiala. Sometimes it would be Pascal Gross or Gundogan. At any point, it was almost always one of them making a run into the box and just creating like a lot of panic for the US, because it's like, how do you decide to pick up on this guy? Because like there's a moment where Gross is running from the sixth position all the way into the box, and like Balogun's kind of like tracking that, but because it's like, I guess I have to track this because he's literally coming from my position. And it's, yeah, I thought they created a lot of like off ball problems for us, and a lot of it's just like their intelligence, like they're just the extreme intelligence, and I think we saw it in the second half too, like they're just composure as well, like as the game wore on, the quality just kind of bore out. All that to say, you know, I thought the first half was still very encouraging from a U.S. point of view, like the way that we were able to exploit spaces in transition is something I think to build on when you're playing against like teams at that talent level, right?
Totally. No, 100%. You're spot on. And like, I feel like that was a good litmus test for where we are as a team. Obviously, we didn't pass with flying colors, but historically, and I said this around before we walked in the stadium, I was like, I think we have a chance. We have a chance of doing something in this game. And we honestly did, up until like the 55th minute where we just went, all right, never mind. Like we had very good chances throughout this game. But ultimately, when you have that caliber of players, I always say, Rian, what do I say? Talent shines through. Like I've said it 100 times. And it may not be, you may not be like in a one-off game, but like over the course of a running games, like it absolutely will. So I'm still optimistic for the US, or I was very optimistic after this game, even with the loss. I'm very optimistic after last night's win against Ghana, which I'm curious to really get your thoughts on this, because in some ways I feel like we played very well, right, during this game. We clearly did. But I do think in some ways the scoreline's a bit inflated like in terms of not necessarily like XG or just overall how we performed, but in terms of how the goals were scored, like an indirect free kick, a penalty, like those things are very low or not low scoring opportunities, but they have a lower chance of even occurring throughout any given game. In fact, that happened twice in one game. Like that's the only thing, but I thought we played very well overall. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the game and what stood out to you, because you probably watched it from a very different lens.
Yeah, I think I understand what you're saying. Like the indirect free kick and the penalty are not like something that you can rely on happening every game, right? But I do think that those weren't created out, like those didn't happen in a vacuum,
right?
Like the pressure was put to put Ghana into that position. I think part of what comes out of this is that, you know, Ghana are not very good at this moment. They do have they have a couple of very, very good players. Obviously with Thomas Partey and Mohamed Kudus being like the main star players. At the same time, they are still starting an IU brother.
that is just rude.
You know, like, it's
not Andre.
I say the same thing about Crystal Palace, and yet they continue to, you know, be a pretty solidly mid-table team. So
yeah,
probably being a bit harsh on, I think it's Andre IU Jordan.
Oh, I thought it was for some reason I was thinking it was Jordan.
I think it is Jordan IU, but honestly, I couldn't really tell you. But they're still starting an IU brother like that. But again, not to take anything away from how good the performance was, because as flawed as that Ghana team is, and they are, I still think that the U.S. had to create those moments. Still, it was like, even in looking at the first goal, like the buildup there is, again, Balogun involved, a pass, I think it was Dest that played a pass into him, and Balogun with a defender on his back, just a beautiful little layoff right into stride for Dest, and then eventually the ball ends up, I think it's with Weah, and then it gets crossed in. Rebound goes to Gio Reyna, and he gets his first goals. I don't know. It's been a really long time for US. I can't. It might be
at least a year.
Yeah. Because
did you see the defender's reaction, by the way, to his flick over him?
No.
I forget who it was, but there's a view of pointed towards Balogun in the direction that he's coming from, and then you can just see the defender go like. what do you want me to do? Like,
it was just like little moments like that, like against a team that is not as talented as the U.S., and that is a fact. They still handled them very, very comfortably and did it in with some style as well. And I said it to you during the Germany game, right? Like we're here to watch to see people do cool stuff, right? Like that's got to be part of the experience of watching these games. Like obviously, of course, it's a lot more fun winning than not, right? But what was like really fun about the game against Ghana and then and a lot of the moments against Germany as well was the link up. And there's an obvious like building of some relationships between these players, and it's starting to gel a bit more and more. You can see the team getting more and more used to playing with each other, and you can see the team like the talent is there, and their flashes are they're still very young, but the flashes of like really, really high level technical play, you can see it there. And the hope is that these guys just keep progressing and developing and becoming better and better, that, you know, maybe like 2 years from now, if they come up against Germany, or I guess 3 years from now, if they come up against Germany, like maybe the run of play of the game is different because these guys have matured and some of them have gotten better and et cetera, et cetera. But all in all, to say like that performance was against Ghana was really good, and you would hope that if we are, if we think that we are that much better than this Ghana team at this moment in each team's development, like you would hope that they, that you would punish them like that. And the last thing I'll just say, this is again, Fuller, one, Giorena was great in that game. Getting his fitness back up, get 2 45 minute halves for the US in this one. And hopefully he goes back to Dortmund and, you know, starts getting some more minutes and hopefully getting starts eventually as he recovers. And then I think from like a Balogun point of view, like the goal he scores, the spin is just it's like another level. Like he obviously showed it in Ligue 1 last season and has started to show it this season as well with Monaco, but the ceiling, right? I think I've talked about this before. The way that he can raise the ceiling of this team is really impressive. And I thought he was great again last night against Ghana.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of like one of my final questions for you is like, what is the realistic expectation now for this team, right? Like, I can't look at the U.S. men's national team and tell you that they are now, or they are still a quote unquote young team. They are on the younger side. They had one of, if not, I believe, the youngest squad at the World Cup this past year.
Yeah, I think Ghana might have been the other.
Ghana was the other one that was, yeah. Team. Yeah, it was.
May have been younger, second youngest.
Right, but to my point is they're not just a quote-unquote young team now, right? They are a team, and these players have developed. A majority of them play in Europe. That is not something we could have said 10 years ago. So question to you is like, what is the realistic expectation now? And I say this with the knowledge that the next two games that they play are against Trinidad and Tobago in the CONCACAF Nations League. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I believe those games are to qualify for the Copa America as well.
I thought they were going to they're qualified because it's in the US.
No, it's very muddied, very muddled, as you would expect.
Really? From CONCACAF?
CONCACAF / CONMEBOL organized event. Pretty muddied. But essentially, I believe they just need to beat Trinidad and Tobago to officially qualify.
Let's not get our hopes up. So
Yeah. Yes, let's not get our hopes up against Trinidad and Tobago. But I think going back to your overall question, realistic expectations for this team, I think between these two games it gives you a pretty good marker. I know that Germany have not been in a good place results wise over the last couple years. I think we go back to the World Cup and you look at like the underlying numbers in those games, like they actually got pretty unlucky not to make it out of their group. But nevertheless, the results had not been good for them leading up to Nagelsmann's appointment. But you still look at the talent level of that team, and you're still talking about probably like top 10 talent to team in the world. And I think like that's where the U.S. is like hitting their head. Like that's where we're hitting our head right now. That's like the ceiling at the moment. That can, again, like I said, a lot of players are young. And who knows who will develop over the next? I mean, 3 years is a long time in development. Like, someone could pop up who's 18 and potentially not even playing for the U.S. right now, as we see with like Balogun. Like that, we had no clue that a player like that would become available to us, right? So, let's say like that. That's where we're hitting our head right now, and I think that's okay. Like, it's okay to lose to Germany, and look worse than Germany, look like considerably worse than them. Like, that's not insane, especially when the U.S. is missing their best defensive midfielder by a lot in that game. And then obviously missing Anthony Robinson in that game too, who's a really good defensive left back, right? And starting left back on the team as well. But I think like the game against Ghana, where a team that I don't know what their ranking is now, but I would guess they're probably somewhere in that 40, around like 40.
I was going to guess 50. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Considerably better than that team, and a team. And add that performance, how much better they looked than Ghana, and then add in the Germany performance, and it feels like kind of right. Like, the U.S. is probably in that, like, maybe like 12 to 16, 12 to 18 range in terms of teams in the world on based on talent, right? And again, that's just like at this point. And it's okay. It's like to say that we're not as good as those teams right now, like that's fine. Like, and also to say that maybe we will never be as good as those teams on a talent scale, at least not anytime soon. You know,
yeah.
Who knows with like the potential for like development in this country because it started at such a low bar, it's like it's relatively infinite, like of what things can be in over the next couple decades. But for right now, I think being at the best talent level that we've ever been as a national team program, and maybe not still, but like only being like maybe a 4 to 5 spots away from like the top 10 or 12, like talent wise in the world, I think it's very encouraging. And I think you just got to kind of like enjoy the team as they are right now. Like it's so easy to get pulled back into the Berhalter stuff, right? But mm-hmm. but I think we can be realistic as people who do watch a lot of this sport, like outside of the national team and watch multiple leagues. Like, I feel like we have a pretty good grasp on how good other players are in the world.
Yes.
And can kind of watch that game against Germany and not be like, and not lose our heads from, you know,
no,
losing against that team.
No, 100%. To be honest, like, I don't think anyone can look at that Germany performance and say, oh, you know what? We're so far behind every other major team. Like, even thinking back to the Netherlands performance, right, in which we went out, we may not have been the best team on the pitch that day. I would argue that we had a lot of chances to potentially push the Dutch.
Yeah.
I do not. I will say this. I would not have wanted to face Argentina.
Not at all.
I legitimately would have been scared, to face Argentina if that was really the route that we could have gone. But I very much believe that we are on the right track. And to your point about talent, never say never about 5 years, 10 years from now. 2026 is going to be a potential crescendo point, right? Mm-hmm. And who knows what players have truly, you know, developed even further by then, to you know, quote unquote, do something. I don't know what that necessarily looks like, but in terms of expectations, to answer my own question, like, I expect this team to get to the knockouts of the Copa America. Like, that would be, I think, fairly reasonable. Beyond that, I don't know.
I think it'd be pretty disappointing if they don't make it at, like, to the knockouts for sure. And everything depends on your opponent from there, right? Like,
yeah,
depending on, like, look, if they finish in a position in the group where they have to play like Brazil or Argentina in that first round, then God bless, right? I think getting out of the group should be the minimum in that one, right? Similar to what it was in the World Cup.
Totally. Well, with that, Rian, I think we'll wrap up for this week. There's not too much else going on in the footballing world other than, I don't know, Messi did Messi things. Last night against Peru, popped up, scored 2 goals. I think he had 1 disallowed. Just made people look stupid once again. That man, I think he's just doing side quests in Miami. So yeah, honestly, fully just trying to enjoy his last moments of playing this wonderful, stupid, silly sport. With that,
the only thing I'll know is a couple big games from the weekend. Chelsea plays Arsenal on Saturday, so that's probably a big one.
That's gonna be good. Is gonna be very good.
I think, and then I'm looking here earlier in the morning, Liverpool plays Everton. So you got a couple derbies.
Oh, we got a Merseyside. Okay. Well, this weekend in Spain,
the boys play each other. Oh, sorry to interrupt again. In Italy, Milan plays Juventus. So the US
this weekend and next weekend are very good. I was just going to say, in Spain this weekend, you have Sevilla playing Real Madrid, and you have, I believe, Barcelona play Bilbao, which will be a fun game. And then in across Europe the following weekend, you have El Clasico, you have the Manchester Derby, you have, is it the Milan Derby as well? Something, you have something going on. And then in the Eredivisie, you have PSV Ajax, I believe. So like just a lot going on that day.
Who is in the relegation zone right now.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. I don't, maybe, is it Napoli versus Milan? I'm really.
Napoli. It's Napoli versus Milan.
Thank you. Right. Thank you. Not the Milan Derby. So anyway, with that being said, thank you as always, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. We'll be back next week once those big games, like we just mentioned, have been played. I fully expect Chelsea to do something against Arsenal this weekend. I fully expect. I'm confident in something for your team.
It's a home game, so we'll see. Yeah, that's.
Now, I'm not gonna lie, that doesn't really mean much right now. But
I
tried, but that's
yeah.
Anyway, all right. Thank you, everybody. We will talk to you all soon.
Thanks, guys.